Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 2 of the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
And this week was Gamescom 2018, which is fast becoming Europe's E3. It's pretty much the biggest deal in gaming, and all sorts of things were there. So I thought we'd just dedicate a whole episode to talking about it, because there were all sorts of delicious bits and bobs. Rich, what was your biggest takeaway so far?
Oh, do you know what?
Every little thing. It was very nice.
I honestly don't know. It's just lots of quality stuff. Mm-hmm. I think unless I'm completely missing something, there's nothing that's like stuck out to me. I thought everything was great.
It was just
overall.
There was a lot of gameplay stuff, Mr. Josh. Yeah.
Resident Evil 2 was amazing, I thought. Yes. We've already seen footage from that game before, but mm-hmm. they showed off, you know, new gameplay from Claire, more stuff from Leon, and man, I'm just ready for it. I'm ready for that Resident Evil experience now after 7, which was great. 7 yeah. was great, but I want to go back to that sort of core style of 4.
Yeah, I'm way more up for 4 or Revelation style. Over-shoulder Resi is the best Resi, although I do like isometric Resi. I think, it's been a while since Capcom have put this much time and effort into something with that camera angle and that whole approach to it.
Yeah.
And so they showcased the William Birkin boss fight, man with the eye on
big
his shoulder.
Big eye on his arm, yeah.
Yeah, who a lot of people sort of recognize and associate with Resident Evil. And yeah. it just looks great.
Like I recognized it. And I know nothing about Resident Evil. So
he's sort of like him and Nemesis are like the two that sort of get out there.
Well, Adam Cleary thought he was Nemesis, if I recall.
Yes, he did. He announced that thing, and I was like, "Nah, son, it's Resident Evil 2." But yeah, so I've got a bit of a list for us to crack on with, and we'll end up going back around to Resident Evil 2 because it seems to be a lot of people's most anticipated game. But we'll get there. So one of the biggest things was Devil May Cry 5 got a big old chunk of gameplay and some more stuff for Dante. But in terms of the gameplay, they just showed Nero fighting in a town square. It seems like it's like 60 FPS. Obviously, it's all 4K.
It looks stunning,
yes.
I must say. The lighting, especially. And as you said, running at 60 FPS solid as well, because the gameplay they showed was the Xbox One X gameplay.
It just looks beautiful. I mean, the whole thing with that, they've kind of gone back to the drawing board a little bit and got some specific actors in to model faces, and they've got like actual clothes that they're wearing or what they have in the game and things like that to try and make it look semi-realistic as far as the character designs go.
There was a part that showed like the introduction of an enemy, which reminded me of Smash Brothers. It's like, this person coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I'm intrigued as to whether they're going to be pre-rendered or in-game, because you don't, obviously, the beauty of modern stuff, you don't see that difference between a pre-rendered cutscene and the gameplay. So I'm intrigued as to whether that was in-engine in real time. If there are alternate costumes, as to whether that will change alongside the cutscenes as well.
I know, they seem to have this massive push towards graphics, and it does look absolutely beautiful. In terms of it being stylized as well, like, I mean, the meter that always comes on the side of the screen in DMC, like the whole, you know, stylish, awesome, brutal or whatever it is, that thing actually like pulsates in time with the music now.
I saw that.
And it plays the Devil Trigger music, which, I mean, we've listened to that song.
That is awesome.
A few thousand times
already. You have put that on The Office so many goddamn times.
It's got possibly the best chorus of the year, and there's a lot of good stuff this year. But I'm a huge fan of the Devil Trig. Also, Dante's new look was debuted in full, which...
I like it.
Absolutely, I love it.
Like we were talking earlier before this podcast, and you mentioned that Dante's new look and the new feel of Dante is sort of like an amalgamation of every version of his character so far. You've got like, you know, like the swagger of 2. You've got like, is it the coat from 3 that you mentioned?
Pretty much the way he's wearing his coat is how he has it in 3, where it's open with the strap along. I think he has the strap along the middle, but either way, the whole like open coat on the shoulders. Getting very nerdy about DMC, but I'm a huge DMC fan. So yeah, the look of him in the new one is very much like, it looks like they've taken influence from all the other other incarnations. He doesn't seem to have the cowboy boots from GMC4.
God damn it.
But he looks great. I mean, his face model, I don't know what you call the actor that they've based the new version on, but he's very Nirvana. Looks a lot like Cobain. Like, I'm getting a real strong, grungy Kurt Cobain, Alice in Chains kind of vibe, which is, you know, couldn't be more love letter to me, to be honest.
So he's just going to pull out a guitar and kill demons with that.
Well, DMC3 had him with a guitar. You could
really
play that.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah. In DMC3, you could actually, like, you know, you could do riffs and kill dudes with guitars, brutal legend style. But the new weapon in this one is a bike. He actually rides a bike into the gameplay clip and then dissects it into two, like, gloves.
God,
and
awesome.
just punches the shit out of stuff with these two bike gloves, which, you know, sure, I'm game for that.
Talking about all of this raises a very sort of serious, salient question of the differences in the art style. It's like Rich said, it's far more down-to-earth, far more quote-unquote realistic art style, and you're still doing all of this stuff. And I know before it was officially announced, me and you had a lot of conversations about how they were going to pull that off and whether that was going to be incongruous with what came before. And it looks like you've done it really well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got like Nero. Obviously, Nero is like demon arm. I think he gets severed at the end of 4. I forget. Might get severed in this one. But either way, in the new gameplay, he's got like a robotic arm.
He's using like a grappling hook and he's like pulling demons towards him and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's like pulling dudes in and he like actually like lets it loose and rides it, which is some pure like Phantom Pain level insanity.
He did a cool super move at one point in the gameplay I was watching where he like sort of like took it off and sort of blasted a load of fools.
Yeah,
I was
like, he got like a massive laser, didn't he?
Yeah.
Absolutely shredded them.
Yeah. I think that might be one of the Devil Trigger like final specials or something.
Because in the gameplay, it showed like there are two of these gauntlety, glovey things in this level, and he was switching out, well, the player was switching out between them during the gameplay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, it seems like it's shaping up very well. I mean, it's been a decade. Like, DMC4 was 2008, so it's like, if they're going to bring the franchise back and the size of the fan base, they need to do it with the utmost confidence.
And that's completely ignoring DMC.
How do you mean? Oh God, yes, it is. I didn't even think of that.
Well, here's the thing, Scott. You're by far the most diehard DMC fan in this office and potentially of all time. After sort of DMC4 and then, of course, DMC the reboot, is this enough to sort of bring back those sort of old school fans?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, honestly, I forgot that 2013 game even happened. And I do own it. But I completely forgot about that. Because, the way that they're going forward with this, obviously numbering it is a big tell to say that we're continuing where we left off. And the design of Dante is old school Dante, albino with the big red coat and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is what fans have been waiting for. I was part of the whole rabble back in 2013 going, that's not my Dante. And I just really hated what they did with him. So to discard that, like some Hobbit prequel, Star Wars prequel, and just pretend that it never happened and carry on where you left off, that's perfect for me.
You know what? It's coming out at the perfect time. You know, we've got the new Terminator movie just disregarding all the sequels. We've got the new Halloween disregarding all of the sequels. Now we've got Devil May Cry disregarding that reboot.
If only we could also disregard The Last Jedi and carry on where we left off.
That's my one for this.
This is a debate for another
time. I refuse to get into this.
So next news item is the Master Chief Collection is finally being fixed and being released September 1st. It only took them 4 years.
What an absolute piss
take. It is a little bit. So basically the initial release of the MCC back in 2014 was a complete mess. A matchmaking was mostly broken and it just took forever to make it playable at all. So 343 went back to the drawing boards and eventually have managed to turn it around. So September 1st, it's the Xbox One X release. So they're touting like 4K graphics, all that kind of stuff. And it's essentially just meant to be the version that was going to release 4 years ago.
For something that was such a shoo-in for being a success. I remember when they first announced it at E3 and everyone was like, oh my God, this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
How have they managed to knacker it so badly?
Well, it's just like, how do you mess up combining 4 of the best shooter games of all time? Even 4, I would go to bat for. But like,
I would go to bat for 4.
I'd go to bat for Mr. 4. But still, the original trilogy, obviously, you know, prolific. And it's just like, how do you mess this up? And they did.
It's like, oh, let's remaster the greatest game of all time. And they just put absolutely no effort into it. Like,
well, they did.
Because it's still 343.
Mm-hmm.
Did they do the whole game? I'm assuming that obviously there'll probably be other studios working with them as well. But obviously,
I think mostly it was them. I mean, the more you delve into it, the developers have been very frank about the way that the production was handled. They just opened up on Reddit and they were just like, we ran out of time. We tried our best. And the work that they have done, you look at the cutscenes that they redid for Halo 2, like they look phenomenal.
Yeah.
And it's like, there are bits and pieces where their love comes through.
I just find it amazing that they managed to do that alongside doing Halo 4 and Halo 5 and now Infinite.
I mean, 5's another story.
We don't talk about 5.
it was always a very promising package, and regardless of the amount of time it's taken, I'm just glad that there is a way to play all those games in one place.
And I think that's good. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't have an Xbox. I can play Windows stuff on PC, so There's a part of me that's kind of tempted to get it for PC because I've only played a bit of Halo 3.
Oh man, it's totally worth it.
And I've not played Halo 1 and 2.
Yeah, so. I mean, like, it has the whole custom matchmaking thing, yeah. So you can just tell it, like, look, give me the best levels from the whole trilogy in one big matchmaking playlist, and that's a great way to play that original trilogy.
I think it's a great long overdue step for Halo at this point in time because it's in a really weird place at the moment, that franchise, coming off 5 and the announcement of Infinite, which no one seems to know what
Fireteam Raven.
But people were still excited. Like, when they did the reveal at E3 to open Xbox's conference, and as soon as you saw the Chief's helmet, everyone went absolutely mental. So, irrelevant of like how bad 5 was for people, people are still excited for
Halo. Well,
that's
the thing. I mean, and plus, like, obviously they played their iconography cards very well because that Infinite trailer was very reminiscent of the Silent Cartographer level. And, you know, you even show the Chief's helmet, the yellow visor, the green helmet. People are going to go, oh my God, that's my childhood, or that's my teenage years.
It's the Chief
or
again.
Whatever. Yeah, so it's like you've always got that to pull from. I mean, I was someone who went, what? When they said it's a new Halo game. But Fireteam Raven's their big push into making it an arcade staple, like in a cabinet kind of thing. And that just seems to be falling by the wayside. So I don't know. But another little piece of news was Shenmue 3 finally got a release date, at least as far as they say, coming August 27th, 2019.
That's exciting.
I don't know, exactly. To be honest.
It's just this idea of is it really going to happen? Because I know that people have been convinced. It's like Josh Brown and Death Stranding. Like people aren't convinced this game's actually going to release. It's all just a big piss take.
Well, another thing with Shenmue is that the 1 and 2 HD re-release, which apparently is a really brilliant way to play those games, and side by side looks a hell of a lot better, cleaner, it's well rendered, barely got any sort of fanfare or anything. Like, I mean, it's out now. It's been out for a few days.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, like, Shenmue is one of the most storied, prolific, you know, it's a very well-known franchise, but the re-releases of 1 and 2 are just kind of there.
I just can't get excited for it because the messaging about this game, and even, like you said, the remix has been all over the place. They said at the start of this year, nope, it's definitely coming out before the end of 2018. Mm-hmm. We all knew that was BS, but they kept up that messaging and then to now have to go, oh no, it's August of next year. Sorry,
yeah,
guys.
And it's just the mix of like the Kickstarter thing and then like, well, actually, you know, it isn't bit like Sony, like, oh no, we're not helping with the development. And then later on, oh, actually, no, we are helping with, oh, we're going to fund it, we're going to get involved. And then just the amount of money they've asked for and then the complete lack of facial animation. It seems a bit all over the place. It's kind of in the same bracket as the Final Fantasy VII remake for me, where I'm just like, I'll believe it when it's there. Like, I just don't.
And people aren't too sure about that yet either.
No. So. And so for Shenmue, I mean, I'm going to do the due diligence. I went back, I bought Shenmue 1 and 2 last night. They took a little while to download, but I'm going to get stuck into them. And then we'll just, I need to see whether it still works for someone who is coming in fresh.
I think, like you mentioned, Final Fantasy VII Remake, mm-hmm. and that is sort of in the same position, but they have at least kept their head down and haven't constantly sort of put their foot in it. Like, there are reports coming out that, oh, it's not going to be ready until 2023 or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's been nothing official, no, like, official statements that can sort of fling mud back up in their faces like Shenmue 3 constantly keeps doing.
This is where they turn around at like PlayStation Experience and say Shenmue 3 launching, what is it, like August 2019.
It wouldn't surprise
in
me.
Early access.
Yeah. Like at this stage, it really wouldn't surprise me. I just think there's so much weight on that. I mean, like, a few years ago, you had like the big threes, like The Last Guardian's never going to happen. The Final Fantasy remake's never going to happen. Shenmue 3, never going to happen. All of those have now been confirmed. 2 out of 3 are like out there, I guess. Or at least
Last Guardian. 3 out of 4, mate. We're still waiting on Half-Life 3.
Oh, God, yeah.
I think it's just that hugely anticipated sequel weight. That's gonna bug Shenmue because the expectations are gonna be so high. Mm-hmm. If there's one bug, there's one little thing, one character's chin doesn't move in like sync with a word they're saying, the whole fan base is gonna go absolutely
well. It's fine,
like, rabid.
Because none of them have facial animations at the moment anyway. So.
Okay.
They're all just constantly shocked for the most part. But there's a hell of a lot for it to live up to. I'm cautiously optimistic. I want to believe that YSNet, the devs, considering they've been waiting this long to do it. I would hope that it actually comes together. But yeah, so I'm going to mix in a couple of fan questions while we're doing this thing. So from Black Heart Hero says, what are we most excited for? We kind of got into that at the beginning, but that was kind of what stuck out the most. For me, it's DMC5, because they're pulling out all the stops for it. And I adore the way that Dante looks. But as we'll get to other stuff as well, there's also Cyberpunk, there's Sekiro. Like, there's a good old
Sekiro,
chunk.
Sekiro, we haven't even talked
we'll
about
get to Sekiro.
We'll get to Sekiro.
Unless you want to talk about Sekiro now, if it is your most looking forward to game.
It wasn't. Mm-hmm. We talked about this briefly in the podcast before, what we're looking forward to, like, going forward in the coming months. Mine was obviously Spider-Man, Red Dead. Sekiro has always been on the radar, but it's never been up there. And man, after these gameplay trailers, I am really sold. I am really, really
so
sold.
So let me drop in. Sekiro finally got a release date as well, March 22nd, 2019. Everything's just getting out the way of Red Dead 2. It's just like, let's just flee into 2019.
I mean,
the
thing is, at least they know.
Yeah,
and another good thing you can bring from that is they're giving players a chance to play Red Dead. Like, oh, yeah. They're not going to turn and go, oh, here you go. You have 3 days of Red Dead, and then you can come play our game.
Yeah, you kind of need to get out the way of the new Rockstar release. But yeah, I mean, the way that they showed Sekiro off, and let's just get stuck into gameplay stuff, the way they're trying to differentiate it from Bloodborne is to have this massive focus on stuns and counters, and like every melee stab really matters. You're not sort of... It seems like it's kind of going like a For Honor-ish route, where it's like you really need to pay attention to everything that you're doing.
I'm very new to Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. I'm very new to the Souls games. Mm-hmm. So would you say Sekiro is a Souls game?
Watching
the gameplay, it's like, you got this, and then you set it at a shrine, and all this. It's still very much a From Software, like, Souls game.
I mean, they carry that stuff across.
Compared to, like, when I started playing Dark Souls Remastered, and I'm getting dicked on in the first level, by looking at, I mean, I don't know at what point in the game that gameplay is from, but it doesn't look like you are going to be the weakest man in the room for once.
No,
from what I know so far from like Souls games.
There's a lot more empowering mechanics in Sekiro. I mean, like, obviously one of the big things is stealth. That's kind of where the Tenchu like vibes kind of come from. And they've got this system where it's like a specific contextual spot on the screen. And if you say like you're still fighting an enemy or you're hovering around them in like a stealth-based capacity, then you'll get this little hover icon on them. And if you match that, you can just instantly kill them.
Yeah.
So you free that up by fighting them normally, or you can just stealth kill stuff. So there is a way to thin the ranks, which there's never been in Souls and Bloodborne.
Has been a natural progression of making the player more active in these games ever since the first Dark Souls. Obviously, a lot of people played Dark Souls, myself included, the first time, as a tank, you know, fat rolling everywhere, shield up, sword primed. But ever since then, Dark Souls 2 didn't really. I think one character in Dark Souls 2 started you off with a shield, whereas everyone else, you were like double-handing weapons and you were trying to be more offensive. Then in Bloodborne, you had the rally mechanic, which made you constantly go into fights and sort of fight back. And this seems like the culmination of that natural progression, in that you want to be active in these fights. You want to be sort of going after these people. You want to be thinning the herd. You don't want to be sort of standing back. And I think, like you said, Rich, that will be a more accessible, better, potentially experience.
I was literally going to ask, like, do you think that makes Sekiro more of an accessible game?
I mean, to be honest, the first Dark Souls is still very much accessible. Like, it's hard and it's unforgiving, but you can leap in and
if you go in knowing that, you're not going to get, like, you're not going to feel like you've wasted money.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, that's the thing. That's kind of the beauty of, like, the Souls games. And obviously, a lot of people discover them retrospectively if you go all the way back to Demons 2009. Like, there's that whole thing where you can leap in, you've got your dodge roll, you know, you can attack and dodge, and block and stuff. And yeah, Sekiro seems like they're expanding that base moveset. Like, I think now you have a dedicated jump button, and like they've changed the way that, like, obviously you can die twice, obviously in the title, but you have that option now, like Fable style, where like you can come back straight away or you can reset back to the checkpoint and replenish. But they're like sort of mechanics that build on the assumptions that come with a Souls game, but I think that base set of mechanics is still like really accessible.
Before what I've seen, it looks like it's still going to be a satisfactory game for the Souls fans.
Yeah, I mean, like From Software are building an identity right now. Like,
but I think that they're opening up this potential accessibility and not pulling a Bethesda by stripping it bare.
Mm. No.
And then saying, here we go, like more people can get into this. And, you know, admittedly, it worked for Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's going to work for Sekiro, because, I mean, obviously, like I said, I've only played like a few hours of Dark Souls and I'm terrible at it, but I want to play more of it. I'm watching this Sekiro stuff. I'm thinking, I would play this.
Because, I mean, Sekiro looks like, to me, it's got the pace of Bloodborne, but I like, there's way more style to it. Like a lot of the, I'm just calling them like fatalities, a lot of the moves that you can pull off when you get enemies on low enough
over
health.
The top and brilliant.
Yeah, you're like climbing on dudes' heads and like doing like Wind Waker style, like plunge through the head and stuff like that. And I saw someone gift on Twitter. It was like, yep, Sekiro is still a Souls game. And it was basically this person who was playing, fighting this big monster, doing a bunch of different attacks. Like, you know, you get in like a flow in Souls. You're like, right, I've got this. And then they, you know, they did the assumed like, oh, they got a bit greedy. And the enemy just grabbed them, picked them up and threw them over a cliff and killed them. And it's just like, everything can just go sideways so fast. And that's kind of something that we associate with Dark Souls. And I imagine that on the dev side, like they've got to balance the stealth, the empowerment of stealth and one hit kills.
Definitely.
With like the impetus to actually want to fight instead of just sticking to stealth. For me, I'll be getting stuck into both sides of it. Like there hasn't been a truly great stealth game. We talked about this last podcast. There hasn't been a truly great stealth game in a long time or something that really puts stealth to the fore. I guess maybe Hitman.
Yeah.
But you know, the eyes of the world are kind of on Sekiro, so I'm kind of interested to see how they balance everything.
It's really interesting how they've, like we said, they've kept the bones of those Souls games. And I really didn't think they would, honestly, when it was first announced at E3.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought this was going to be a markedly different game from Souls, and it is.
Yeah.
But that core foundation, some of the mechanics are carrying over and being evolved so that you can come from those games and sort of have a familiar time. And yet, like you said, Rich, it's bringing in an entirely new audience who can jump into this and then maybe even go back and play those other games.
Yeah, which are obviously all still recommendable and they haven't aged that bad,
if at
all, really. Let's talk about bones, though. So one of the new gameplay things is the dude's like prosthetic, weird, undead replaceable arm.
Shinobi arm, I think.
Shenanigans. Yeah, so he's got he can fire shurikens from it. He can transform it into an axe. I think the grapple itself is part of that.
A flamethrower.
It seems like they're sort of indulging in the wacky. I mean, Bloodborne had some stuff like that too, like the more over the top steampunky kind of weapons. So I guess a part of that identity kind of carries across. But for me, the biggest thing that's going to change gameplay the most is the grappling hook, because I just want to be on the move the whole time. And it seems like you can turtle around enemies way faster by just grapple flinging past them, like, back and forward.
It'll be
quite
like Dark Souls meets Doom.
I guess so.
In terms of how you get around
it. Like a little bit of like Titanfall-ish physics, although it's very canned animation style to get around them.
In like going back to that sort of arm and like the grappling hook, mm-hmm. that sort of makes it more of a kind of spectacle fighter than it does a sort of Dark Souls thing. So you have the contemplative, methodical, you've got to learn your enemy's fighting game mm-hmm. style combat system, but then you've also got this thing where you're flipping around and you're stabbing dudes in the neck and you're setting them on fire with your massive magic arm. that's great.
That's a back of the box.
They're managing to blend accessibility with the spectacle, and if they do that with the groundwork, they're onto an absolute winner.
Plus, I mean, I think they're taking a little bit of a nod from like some of the stuff that Platinum's pioneered. Like Platinum are the only name when you start talking about third person action hack and slash type stuff, and they've sort of brought across, like you said, spectacle based things. And a little bit of it reminds me of Neo. Like Neo has like a stun gauge, and the pace of Neo. I think they've kind of looked at the competition and gone like, well, we can step ourselves up as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a lot of Sekiro talk, but it does look pretty damn good.
It looks lovely.
It does look gorgeous.
That question.
Yes, I was going to say that was a whole big old segue. Rich, what game are you looking forward to?
Well, oh God, I don't know. I'm looking forward to Spider-Man.
Yes.
I think just in general, I think it'll just be a really, really fun time. Mm-hmm. Because I want stuff to play on my PS4. Because sort of sits there, bar Dark Souls Remastered, which I haven't touched very much.
You'll get to it.
Black Ops 4 is another one. Like, I was not, like, when it first got announced, I was like, oh my God, it's a new Black Ops game. Then all stuff happened, and it was like, oh, okay, this is starting to go a bit. And then the zombie stuff, obviously, I'm excited for, of course. But then after playing the beta for the multiplayer, I'm actually very, very re-excited for this game. I think it could be really good.
It's a strange thing with the Black Ops 4. We can get onto Battlefield later, but, like, obviously, Call of Duty Battlefield and Battlefield have dominated the military shooters for the longest time.
Which is general, just, like, FPS's.
Yeah, yeah, like since like 2007.
Relatively daily. A yearly release. So,
but it's just like they've been at the fore for so long, and it kind of feels like, I mean, Black Ops has put a better foot forward than I think Battlefield has by a considerable margin so far. But like, I don't know, the general sort of conversation around both of them at the minute isn't that positive. Like, it's just sort of like, well, bits of it.
We'll get onto Battlefield in a minute. I'm sure we'll bring Black Ops up then, because there is a comparison to make between the two, especially in its current state. But in terms of like another game I'm excited for that is very much on a very obscure slant, because obviously I like my PC games, and I doubt you two have heard of this because it was at the PC gaming show at E3.
Is it Toybox Turbos 2?
No, it's not. I wish. there's a game coming from Coffee Stain Studios who made Goat Simulator.
Okay.
I'm only saying that because that's the biggest game.
That made a ludicrous amount of money.
It did. And they also did things like Sanctum, which is the FPS tower defense game from God knows when.
Okay.
But they're doing a new game called Satisfactory.
Okay.
Which is a resource sim where you're on a planet and you've got a bunch of aliens and you need to essentially plan resources, use resources, and you build machines and conveyor belts and you get everything running autonomously.
I want to say that's been in early access for a while.
No. It's very similar to a game called Factorio, which I've played an absolute ton of already.
That's it.
But it's like that, but in 3D. It's gorgeous. It's built as like Factorio as an FPS. And I know people who don't like Factorio for what it is. Mm-hmm. But in an FPS setting with that extra approach to the gameplay, which will benefit more the combat against in aliens and stuff versus the actual management side of things, it's going to be a lot more accessible, as we've already said today.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's another game I'm super hyped for. No idea when it's coming out. None of that. No idea. Coffee Stain are very, very funny about joking about how little time they're putting into this game, which counters like, you know, the self-deprecating humor. It's like, that's all funny, but I want to play Satisfactory. Yeah. I have it now, please.
I mean, when Goat Simulator took off, they made like 8 versions of it. There's like an MMO one and like some...
And the DLCs and like... I mean, I played about half an hour Goat Simulator and it's like, this is funny. And
I guess
never going to play this again.
I'm interested to see what they do as a follow-up to Goat Simulator.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But let's get back to some big old stuff. Cyberpunk 2077 got another demo. Wow. But I don't know if you guys read the description from what people saw.
I did.
Yes?
I did.
It was a little bit different. So apparently the one that they showed at E3 basically had the character. The character's called V, regardless of whether you're male or female or whatever. You're called V, and the demo that they had at E3 was basically them trying to get into this like gang hideout or gang area. And the way that they did that in the E3 demo was to just go all full on, guns blazing, attaching to the wall like with your arm spikes and shooting down on everybody. And, you know, taking advantage of the cover system and whatever, all that kind of stuff, mind hacking and all that. So for Gamescom, they sat everybody back down again. In the room that they would show the rest of the world, they just show the select few that
just
get in.
Let us see it, mate.
So the one that they did at Gamescom was the same setup, but instead of going all guns blazing, the character V, which was a male version this time around, because they wanted to show that you can do like mixed relationships and stuff. Like basically, he woke up next to a guy in bed instead of a woman waking up with a guy, which is just cool to see. And so instead of that scenario being repeated, he went through to the area where all the gun-toting people were and walked through to the crime boss and just had a conversation with him instead, and just sort of said like, "Look, the thing that I was going to steal from you, I'm going to let you know that I need it." And then that like turned the crime boss on the person that you'd been hired by, and so the whole scenario went completely differently, and you got given the thing you were going to be stealing because the person that the crime boss was like, "Well, thank you for giving me the information," and it just, the whole thing went completely differently, and it was more dialogue focused. So I mean, you know, they've been hinting at things like that, and we've seen systems like that in Deus Ex or sometimes even The Witcher, but to have like a fully responsive world is the big sell for Cyberpunk.
That's so, what I saw. I saw this interview, I think it's by Nvidia, spoke to, I think, one of the directors of the game, and he was saying about, you know, you can approach situations in different ways. Like, I think it's in, like, Fallout. If you point your gun at somebody, they might bow to your whims, but yeah. I think they're taking that much more seriously in Cyberpunk.
Oh, totally.
Because, obviously, we all thought, at first, that 2077 was going to be just an RPG, third-person RPG.
Kind of. I mean, I adore CDPR, so I was like, they're going to do something
and
special.
When else it turned out to be an FPS, people were like, "Oh, guys, it's an FPS." Mm-hmm. But they seem to be trying to add that layer of depth into it. But I think one of the things that's really selling me on it is they're not turning around and saying, this is going to be like an open world RPG FPS. Like, it's still going to be this linear game, but you can take it in whatever direction you want.
I mean, it's kind of
it's like an FPS, but with just a ton more depth, rather than just going here. Like, here's the corridor you go down, but here's like you're actually in a massive field. Like, you can do whatever the hell you want. Mm-hmm. But I like that from a game, because if I don't like being dropped into the middle of just this massive, like, you do what you want. Like, I was like that with Horizon when I first played Horizon. I thought, this is amazing, but
Like, what do I do now?
There's so much to do. I feel like I need to do all of it. I can't be asked.
Yeah, like, Horizon had a lot of side content, but like once you got stuck into the main missions, you could just mainline them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like with Cyberpunk, like, yeah, it is kind of, you can dovetail off and just explore the world, because both CDPR and Rockstar are prioritizing just like an amazing or endless amount of like immersive systems that all overlap. Like Red Dead is like one of the most interactive worlds ever. And yeah. It seems like Cyberpunk is kind of going down that route, but there is a story you just mainline if you want to do that too. Which I like the sound of.
I love in CD Projekt Red games like The Witcher, well, the Witcher series mostly, mm-hmm. of course. None of their side missions feel like side content, if right. that makes sense. Yeah. Everything seems like important, and you can do the main story, and the main story is great, but mm-hmm. everything else is so fully formed and so fleshed out. Like you said, you could accomplish the ways. The tools you have at your disposal are the exact same tools you have at your disposal in the main campaign. Mm-hmm. So you can accomplish those side missions whichever way you want. You can interact with that world in whichever way you want. And for me, that's always the best part of those games. It's the same with kind of Rockstar's kind of tapping into that, mm-hmm. where I just want to be in a world and I want to be able to interact with it and explore and sort of make my mark on it. And I think they give you the opportunity to do that mm-hmm. in a way that few of the developers do.
Yeah, and I think it's a worthwhile distinction to make that Ubisoft open worlds tend to fall into the wrong side of that, where it's like, here's a million fetch quests, or here's a million like collectibles to go find. That seems to be, as we move through the generation, or potentially on the cusp of the next generation, the way that an older way to do an open world game, because everyone is so sick of that style of design. Yeah. Like, it's just so full of busy work and things like that.
Especially with, like I said, about there being so many of them now, especially on Ubisoft's side. Like, I know that Assassin's Creed isn't going to be every year now, but having this massive open world with so much to do every 2 years, you think, like, A, how are you managing to make these? Mm-hmm. But also, how are you expecting us to play them?
Well, that's the thing with Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I mean, like, it's only, I can't think how many months it's been since Origins, but it's not very long. And, like, Odyssey is just sort of, here's another massive 75-hour thing. And it's like, if you rinsed Assassin's Creed Origins and you got a lot out of it, playing Odyssey is pretty much just like hitting the reset button again.
Yeah.
And that can be incredibly tiring.
That's all I saw when I saw it on E3. It just looks like the same thing again. I mean, I know mm-hmm. that's the kind of what you get with Assassin's Creed, but like,
Odyssey in this case does look like
it just
like
looks
more
so
Origin.
Similar.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're entirely spot on, and that's the biggest criticism I've had of Ubisoft this generation.
That's what I do.
But I think we are actually seeing them change that focus in a way with sort of stuff like Ghost Recon, and I know Siege isn't open world, but they're starting to treat these games as sort of platforms for content, and they give you a reason to return to Wildlands. They put the Predator in, they put Sam Fisher in, they have crossovers with other games. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the best for these open world games going forward. I know it is really soon to have Odyssey after Origins, but I wouldn't be surprised if they try to mine Odyssey for more game time than any other Assassin's Creed before and just let it breathe.
Yeah, well, that's another thing about it. I just don't like it if a game turns around and says, you have to come back and play me. Like, we expect you to come back and play, which is obviously the approach that EA took with Battlefront 2, which obviously went completely wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just having that approach with everything. Like, have they confirmed that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is going to be like a linear game?
No, at the minute...
That's still kind of up in the air, isn't it?
Yeah, the design doc for that is very much them doing a No Man's Sky, where it's you take on missions, you have a crew... Oh, sorry, not a crew, but you have a ship, and you're going between planets. And, like, Jade is some sort of evil character now. And, yeah, it's very much up in the air. I mean, if you read into that game, Michel Ancel was pretty much just started development when they announced it, so I don't think even he really knows what it's going to be.
Yeah, it was, like, Day Zero, like, last year, wasn't it?
And it was, like, I can't even think where this is... I can't think of the source right now, but there was someone who said that what they were in the room with Michel Ancel when everything was being announced, and he was just sitting there in his room going like, yep, we need to figure this out. And it was like, yeah, literally day zero or day minus five of development.
But at least it is happening though.
Apparently. I mean, I think they tried out Beyond Good and Evil because they needed to stave off hostile takeover from Vivendi.
Right.
So like Ubisoft, I mean, you had that whole thing where it was like, you know, Ubi at E3, and it was like, we're all a family, like, please don't take us away. And like, they've, you know, got on stage, like, oh God, we've got all these projects in the works. Like, you can't stop us now. And then now that that's all stopped and Vivendi have like, you know, retracted their claws, then like they can kind of go back to being like, actually, it's not coming until like 2025. But I mean, yeah, the whole thing with Beyond Good and Evil just seems incredibly... I don't know, ambitious and potentially not in the best way. Another fan question from Dylan Todd says, favorite game that deserved a sequel and never got one? So we'll deviate away from Gamescom for a little bit, just for a bit of a curveball.
Oh, I need to contemplate on this.
Okay, you can contemplate.
Do you have something that comes to mind?
God, I could go back into Soul Reaver.
I'm right on it.
Oh, this guy.
And admittedly, the reason why every time I'm...
I don't know what it is.
I'm just coughing as
I'm
I talk.
I'm just such a phlegmy man.
Game that was going to get a sequel based on how the game ends, but never got one due to the studio being closed down. One of my favorite games of all time. I probably ruined a future chatty faces with this, but Split Second. Second velocity, as we know in the UK, is one of my favorite games of all time, but also one of my favorite racing games of all time. Probably the best arcade racer, in my opinion. And at the end of the game, there's like a big tease, like something's happening. Oh, you're on the podium. You just finished the season. You won, yeah. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff happens. It's all very, you see like a logo and it's like, what's this? And the commentator's like, oh God, what's happening? Oh, not them. And then it cuts and it's like to be continued. And then annoyingly, Disney had a massive like shred of all their interactive stuff. And BlackRock, who were based in like Brighton, I think so. Or Bristol or something. They got closed out of it. So Split Second never got the sequel that it deserved.
Tragic.
That's probably one of the games that I'd love to see a sequel for, but only if they do like a Doom Eternal and they change very little.
Right.
If they brought it back and they'd added loads of new stuff and it'd been like, well, this isn't what I want. Because the beauty of that game is how simple it is.
True. I mean, that plays directly into the whole like 4K over the top, like massive 100-inch TVs.
For a game that's on 7th gen, it is stunning.
We should quickly say what Split Second is. It's pretty much Burnout with Hollywood Pyro.
Yeah,
where you're racing around
a big TV set. A whole city built as a TV set. And in order to get past other races, you have to blow stuff up and destroy them. And it's mental. And then when you see Disney's logo at the beginning, you think, Disney? What?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what it is. And I think if they'd have turned around and said, yeah, you can experience this in 4K, like, they'd make a killing out of it.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it would fit perfectly. Plus, there's such a gap for arcade racers. I mean, the nearest is Forza Horizon, and that ain't nowhere near a Burnout.
It's still, it's like an arcade racer, but with horrendously realistic driving.
Yes, but it still has that vibe of, like, just super fast. Like, you can get tunnel vision once you hit the nitro boost. Like, it's so good. Mr. Josh, have you thought?
Yes, I have an honorable mention first, which is Sunset Overdrive.
Oh!
Because that deserves a second game, because Insomniac are great, and that is, if you are at all worried about Spider-Man PS4, play Sunset Overdrive and realize how good that is. But my main pick is Alan Wake. And I know it's sort of got a DLC but that doesn't count. That's not, that's not a true sequel. In the ending of the first one, it ends at a cliffhanger, which I think is fine. That's okay with me. A lot of great horror fiction, thriller fiction ends on a sort of ambiguous note like that. Twin Peaks and stuff, the things it was inspired by. But still, I thought that played really well. I know when it came out, the story got a lot of praise, the atmosphere got a lot of praise, and the gameplay sort of got shat on a little bit, but that sort of the loop of wearing down enemies with your flashlight and the light sources in general and then finishing them off with a shotgun blast to the face was incredibly satisfying. I mean, it's Remedy, so they do third-person shooting really well, and I want a sequel to that. Microsoft, make it happen.
I would back that. I mean, I got a little bit sick of the combat after a while, but the general look, the feel, all the little shows that thing that pays tribute to, all the different, like, you know, horror movie or thriller ephemera that thing pays tribute to, it's just gorgeous. My shout, I was trying to think of games that, because I was going to go down, you know, franchises that needed a final installment. I was going to say Metal Gear, because as much as I love Phantom Pain, that ain't the end of the plot, the plot bits that we needed. But if you're going to go off a single game, it would be Singularity, which I don't think hardly anybody played. Did you guys play?
Oh my God, yes, it was great. I put that in many lists.
Yes, so we try and put it in all the hidden gems, overlooked, underrated, whatever. It's like just the whole world noticed this game. As I say that, I think of PsyOps, the Mangate Conspiracy, but we talked about that last podcast.
We talk about that all the time.
Please check out episode one. But Singularity, first-person shooter, I think it was developed by Raven Software.
It was.
Raven was one of the most dependable, just such a great developer.
Who are now stuck doing Call of Duty.
Yes, they are. But they used to have such a great, well, they still do have a great track record. Singularity was a first-person game. Time travel, or was alternate dimension stuff, where you cause like this alternate history thing, and it was all about these different mind melding powers, and you could pick stuff up with your special gun, and it was just great. I'd recommend a lot of people to just go check out some footage of Singularity. I absolutely adored that game.
The gameplay, it works. It just really does work, and it didn't sell Call of Duty numbers, so Activision were like, "We'll have none of that, please."
And it's like it reminded me when I went back when I was going through Titanfall 2. There's a level called Effect and Cause, where you're basically going between two timelines at the same time, so you're facing off against some enemy who's right in front of you. You can warp between, like, you go to the future, walk around where behind where they would be, and warp back to the past again, and you're just behind them, and you can like manipulate time to take people out. And there's some of that in Singularity.
Was it pre-Quantum Break?
Oh, yeah. So it was 2007 or 6, I think, blimey, Singularity. Yeah. But yeah, just a well-made game that just went completely under the radar. So yeah, that'll be my shout. Back to Gamescom stuff. Activision are going forward with more Destiny bants. I know most people have fallen off the Destiny train.
I've never played Destiny. See, I'm not that first. As much as it's an FPS, I'm just like,
meh. Yeah, it's very polarizing, I think. There is that little hardcore pocket of people who just adore Destiny. I mean, yeah. I remember reading across the board that the average playtime across all Destiny players, everybody, is 500 hours.
That is mental.
Because the fan base that are there absolutely love it.
No doubt.
No, I know.
No doubt.
And it's like the way that it plays is immaculate. It's just that they don't have, you know, the narrative trappings for it. But that's where this kind of comes in. They basically put out that Cade Six. Do you know who that man is? Are you a fan? He's Nathan Fillion's character.
Oh, right, right. I recognize the name.
Right. Josh knows who Cade Six is.
I know
he is. You know Cade Six.
I know Nathan Fillion.
Well, he's dead, mate. So Cade Six is basically Destiny's most sort of memeable character. He's the one that's the most lovable. He's voiced by Nathan Fillion. And he fronted the initial launch trailer for Destiny 2. And basically, all-around lovable guy. So they've got the Destiny 2 Forsaken DLC, and they've basically released a CG trailer where Cade Six gets killed off, where it's like his final stand. He's taken out as many people as possible, and then the big final boss guy walks towards him and he goes to raise his gun for one last shot, and the final boss guy just smashes him in the face with whatever mace he's got. And that's apparently the end of Cade 6.
Damn it.
I know.
I wish I was more invested, but still, damn it.
So has fans turned around and gone,
well,
okay.
They seem to be doing a Joker in Arkham City / Knight scenario, because the end of that thing, like, you see Cade 6 get hit with the mace thing, and then it shows him fly through a wall, and it's like, probably still lying down in that rubble somewhere. Yeah. So, they've made a big point of saying, no, he's dead. He's definitely dead. We promise he's dead. But I almost guarantee he's not. But that's the big talking point.
Fans going to go, oh, he's alive.
Yeah, ooh. I mean, people are already starting to scour, like, you know, the footage that's there, the things that are being said about him, the interview snippets, to be like, is he really dead or what? Because a lot of people, I mean, I guess you could ask Destiny fans, they'll name every single gun and everything. But Cade 6 was kind of the mainstream pull. So I guess that's maybe their way of getting a wider audience into.
Well, maybe I'll jump in and see if he's alive.
No, you won't.
No,
none of us will. But it's worth pointing out as a talking point in the gaming industry, depending on how it goes. Because this could be the way that Destiny gets back on top, but I doubt it. Another thing was the next game from Resogun, and the next Machina, I believe, is the next game that they did. It was like a side-scrolling shooter thing.
That's Housemarque, isn't it?
Housemarque, yeah. They're just so reliable. They make great, just eye-popping 4K pleasurable games. And Resogun became kind of like a nice little fan favorite when the PS4 launched. Their next game, they're diving into the battle royale genre.
Just a bit too late.
I don't know. It's either it's too late because it's established itself as PUBG and Fortnite, and I guess we'll see how COD and Battlefield get on. But their next game is going to be called Storm Divers. And when you look at the footage for it, it does look a lot like a sci-fi reskin Fortnite.
That's the thing about battle royale.
Mm-hmm.
Irrelevant of what you do, irrelevant of the different things you do, because I know in that they showed off, like, either that was weather effects or that was like the zone that's going to push players together. But they are doing their own thing, but they all look like the same game.
I think they're kind of hamstrung by the rules of the battle royale genre. It's like if Capture the Flag became its own massive genre, it would always have to be
two flags and then a bunch of people. That's about it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised, honestly, that a battle royale game has come out of Gamescom that wasn't the ones we already know about, so Black Ops 4 and Battlefield 5. Mm-hmm. I just think they're going to get absolutely dicked on.
They might do. I mean, Housemarque have the sort of like indie vote because they kind of like, they straddle that line where they make like indie focused stuff with indie mentalities and their smaller budgets, but they tend to get, you know, they're on sale a lot and a lot of people know Resogun or whatever. So it's like Housemarque, like I said, are very beloved, especially like on social media kind of thing. And Storm Divers does look good. And in terms of the way that it looks like it plays, there's a big focus on classes, and they show someone dropping, like, you know, the initial drop of the round, and they produce like a sword and immediately go invisible, and then you start following someone else with a big rocket launcher. Person that was that cloaked themselves appears in midair and cuts the guy down, and it's all in game. So it's like there are ways to play this that are more demonstrably like class focused.
Irrelevant of what you bring to it, battle royale is battle royale. Mm-hmm. And it gets boring.
Can do.
It does. Yeah. Like the battle royale boom that we've had, I mean, I know that Fortnite is still the biggest game in the world right now, and PUBG is sort of in a weird position right now. It's still very popular, but it's sort of like, people don't...
They feel like they're chasing, and they used to be the market leader. Like, it's like Fortnite kind of ripped them off.
I think they're trying to... I think they've realized they need to just do their own thing now.
Like, this is why I'm interested in these guys more than I am in sort of Battlefield 5 or Blackout, because this seems to have more of an identity, like you said. The stuff coming out of the other studios is just, it's a battle royale game, and there isn't really an identity to it. You can... crap on Fortnite as much as you want to crap on Fortnite. But that has a distinctive look. It has the building elements. It's not just battle royale.
Mm-hmm. The thing is, the other companies have tried to do that. They've tried to introduce their own approach to battle royale, their own style, their own everything like that. And all of them have fallen flat on their ass. The biggest one that I can think of is Radical Heights from Boss Key that just was such a dumb idea from good old Cliffy B.
I think that failed because it was broken and unfinished.
I mean, even then, like, just, oh, let's take a more whimsical approach. Let's take the sort of art style of Fortnite, but make it even sillier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, why?
It was too naked a cash grab. I mean, it was coming out of, like, everyone knew that Lawbreakers was failing and that the servers were shutting down. And then their big response to that was like, actually, guys, we're pivoting into Battle Royale and it's 80s themed.
That game was just dreadful. Like, even looking at it for a game in 2018, mm-hmm. it was 2018. It looks awful.
I really like Cliffy B. I know he's put his foot in his mouth a lot, but I always liked his ambition. I mean, I grew up with him.
There's no disputing it. This guy really is dedicated to his work.
He was always the guy that was like had the big like full size Gears of War Lancer at E3, and I was always like, ah, he seems kind of cool. And one of my mates actually met him like over in America and said he was really canny. And I was always like, I want to appreciate what this guy does. But the thing is, he ended up putting out at the fall of Lawbreakers. He put out like four other conceptualized ideas that the studio were gonna do, and that they either got knocked back or he was saving the pitch to other people or whatever, and all of them looked way better than both Lawbreakers and Radical Heights. Like, there was stuff with like weird like Eastern sort of themed like nano suits and like flying through the air with massive blades, landing in mechs and fighting.
So essentially,
stuff.
Titanfall Sekiro.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, even if you say that, and it's a way more enticing idea
cool, I must say.
Than like an 80s themed battle royale.
But back on this, is it Storm Chasers?
Storm Divers.
Storm Chasers is that TV show, isn't it?
Yes.
Storm Divers. I think it's one of those things where it's another Battle Royale game, mm-hmm. similar to what we're going to think with Blackout and the Battlefield 5 Battle Royale. Mm-hmm. It's just wait and see, but I think I wouldn't put any traction behind these. I think the Battlefield and the COD one will be different because they have the fan base there for the rest of the game.
God.
As for this, I'm really not sure.
I tell you the counterpoint to that. Fortnite has so much momentum. It's so much. People say the word Battle Royale and someone on the street goes Fortnite. Like, it's so established that, like, if you're a diehard Fortnite player, then do you even want to play that with a Call of Duty mold?
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting because I'm curious to just see what it's like playing those frameworks with the Call of Duty engine, DICE's Battlefield engine. But like, if you're really into your Battle Royale and you play it every day and you're already into PUBG and Fortnite, do you care about COD
exactly.
or Battlefield?
That's the thing. It's either they're jumping on this Battle Royale hype train
totally.
Far too late,
mm-hmm.
or they're nailing it and starting at the right time.
Because I wonder,
if Fortnite and PUBG are starting to get a bit stale.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can kind of see
this Fortnite, this whole big Fortnite thing is not going to last forever.
No, not forever. I mean, I think that the bubble that we're in, or like the sort of the escalated level of popularity that it has right now, like that, I think will last for a good, like at least another half a year or another
definitely,
year or so.
Definitely.
Which I guess means that, you know, something like Storm Divers can land in the middle of that and be like, hey, we do that too.
But then I think if somebody waited to like, oh, Fortnite's on the way down, it's now our time. But like, why make a Battle Royale game now? Now it's like turn around saying, we've made an Overwatch clone. It's like,
yeah.
Why?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the amount of games that Overwatch killed, like Lawbreakers was one of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, if that ends up being the case where Fortnite just dominates to a degree that no one wants to try anything else, then that's disastrous for everybody else.
I think it's in the way these big hitters are sort of presenting their Battle Royale games. Like, we talked about Blackout being its own mode, essentially. Mm. You know, you've got zombies, you've got multiplayer, and you've got Blackout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas in Battlefield 5, it feels far more of an afterthought because it's just another mode. You've got Conquest, you've got Grand Operations, and you've got Battle Royale if you want it, but it's not, it doesn't have that same push behind it.
No.
And yet on the other side, like you said, you don't want to go all in on Battle Royale because the market is so saturated, so monopolized.
I think that's an interesting segue into the Battlefield 5 and the COD stuff, because when they showed off Blackout, because I mean, we all knew Blackout was coming.
Yep.
When the first stuff about the next COD came out, we're like, it's going to have Battle
it's
Royale.
It's going to have Battle
and
Royale.
Everyone went, ugh. But then we got to the reveal event, which was in May.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, Blackout, this is it. Here's what it's going to be. Here's some sort of in-game, not really in-game stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then at E3, the guys from DICE just went, Battle Royale, and then walked off the stage. They said they didn't have to. It's not even they didn't have to say anything else.
Yeah,
they just didn't say anything else.
I don't think it's because they had much to say or show.
Yeah, I mean, they just went, oh god, Call of Duty doing it. Oh, we should do it.
We should do it as well. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the latest trailer for Battlefield 5, they did show a tiny snippet.
I didn't even. I only when I realized that that was what it was. I went back and saw it. And, oh, of course. Oh, I see. But when I first saw the first Marshall trailer, it didn't even occur to me that was Battle Royale.
Right.
Didn't occur to me at all.
I think exactly what you just said there, Rich, epitomizes the different approaches of those different studios. Mm-hmm. Treyarch came out and went, Battle Royale, we've got Blackout. It's going to have a distinctive COD theme. We're keeping it within like our identity.
We're stitching
the maps together. It's going to be a celebration of the history. Mm-hmm. And DICE went, Battle Royale. It expected that to sell alone.
Come back
like,
later.
But then,
from a mechanical standpoint, especially with how I like Battle Royale, because I'm a PUBG player, not a Fortnite player, and PUBG plays like a more realistic shooter. There's definitely more. There's more gravity, literally gravity.
No, there's way more
the game.
Tactical elements
and
to it.
Battlefield has that model because Battlefield and Call of Duty are in different leagues now. If you pit them against each other, you're wasting your time. Mm-hmm. So Battlefield, I feel, has a better model for Battle Royale.
Really,
but then their approach to Battle Royale, as we've said, probably isn't going to be as good as the one
True.
For Call of Duty. But I am intrigued, especially after playing the beta for Black Ops 4, the new time to kill, the new health system. Maybe that has come out of the Battle Royale. And if that's the case, that has been a big improvement to Call of Duty.
Plus, if the likes of Stormdivers are going to start implementing more class-based stuff into a Battle Royale, then that is
its own thing. It's a class thing.
Maybe that's why, because you look at Battlefield as opposed to Call of Duty and you think, oh yeah, this is the game that would be best suited for Battle Royale. But maybe that's the problem. Maybe it's because Call of Duty has had to adapt and change that makes it more interesting because they're going to actually do something unique. Well, maybe not unique because there's Activision and Call of Duty, but they're going to try to do something different with it. They're going to have to adapt to make it work, whereas Battlefield can literally just be like, well, the components are kind of there, the features are kind of there, it'll work. I
feel like, you know what, it's obviously as you said, that Blackout is its own mode. Like, there were rumors before they revealed it was going to be its own game. It was just going to be called Call of Duty Blackout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would be just consistently updated. And I think that might be what they do anyway, because I mean, Treyarch is still supporting Black Ops 3 now.
Yeah.
I've completely forgotten my point.
Well, I was going to say, when you said about associating it as its own game, I was just going to say, how much does the average person, the overall public, associate Battle Royale with free? Because Fortnite is free, and that's what made it huge. So if Call of Duty and Battlefield both go, we've got our Battle Royale modes, but they're locked behind £60, $60 paywalls. Oof. I think that'll kill
but
it
then
dead.
Actually, I've remembered where I was going now.
Go on.
Obviously, Blackout is its own mode. I feel like with Battle Royale and Battlefield 5, it's going to be literally team deathmatch, domination, or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. Battle Royale, it's just going to be a multiplayer mode.
Yeah. Possibly, yeah. I mean, something we can pick out from that little teaser was that it's there's firewalls instead of the storm, you do airdrop in, and that there are vehicles, which I guess is potentially enough to give it a little bit of an identity next to Fortnite, next to PUBG. Ish.
Yeah.
There are tanks, mate. There's not any
tanks
in the other
regular
one.
Regular Battlefield, though.
At the end of the day, with both of them, it's just a Battle Royale for the sake of Battle Royale.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, yeah.
It depends which audience you want. Because when you're saying that to me, it's like, oh, it's got tanks. It's got. Well, that's all it's got. It's got tanks. As me as a Battlefield player, I'm looking at that. Why would I want to play that when those features work far better in Conquest or Operations? But if you're attracting a sort of the Battle Royale crowd, that might bring them in, but it's two entirely different demographics you're trying to target there, and it's like, why would you want to split it in that way?
It would be bizarrely poetic if the culmination, if we look back on this in like 3-4 years time after the boom, when it settled down into just like a game mode or whatever it is, if we literally had 100 different Battle Royale games and they all went back down to one and it was still Fortnite. We had 100 potential contenders and it was always the one
literally
person from the beginning.
Literally the Battle Royale of Battle Royale.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of might be a nice way to think about it if it would be disastrous for the other 99 people. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much our roundup of Gamescom. I was initially going to go back to Resident Evil 2 and Sekiro, but we talked a fair bit about them. And you can go and check out substantial gameplay clips of both those games anyway. So yeah, let us know what you think. Either just get in touch on Twitter or find a place that has comments and shout out your love. You can find us on... Well, I guess you probably already found us, but we're on iTunes, we're on Acast, we're on Podbeam, we're on Podcast Addict. We're everywhere. Tell your friends. Find us on Twitter. I'm Scott Tilford @LP89. Mr. Rich.
I'm Rich. I'm @PickupChangeToe.
I'm Josh, and I'm @JoshBroon with 2 O's.
Very nice. And we'll find you guys next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bro, that was cool. Someone hit the button. Hit the button.
Record, then stop.
Just be stop. Record pause, is it?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.